The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
I'm dying with hunger.
Pardon?
I'm dying with hunger.
Je ne sais pas ce qu'il veut, mais parbleu, il le veut avec vigueur.
Qu'est-ce qu'il réclame? Qu'est-ce qu'il réclame? On dirait qu'il mâche du mastic, on ne comprend plus.
Qu'est-ce qu'il réclame? Qu'est-ce qu'il réclame? Si c'est un petit endroit discret, ce n'est pas un sang.
Pourvu que mon mari ne voit pas que je lui mens. Oh mon Dieu, que j'ai peur en ce moment.
Madame est servie.
All right, enfin, j'ai faim.
Hey everyone, another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you. Speaking of Loose Cannons, this podcast that you're listening to, we also have a website, loosecannons.net, where you can find our writings, our videos, and all of our other podcasts, as well as images from the movies put in order. Mm-hmm. So the podcast, you tell which one you're clicking on.
It's true. I like how you get the title.
I like how you said speaking of the podcast, like you were just mentioning it in passing, like, oh yeah, speaking of our podcast, which is this whole audio recording.
No, we're done now. That was it.
Oh, that's it. Yep. That's it. See you later. Bye.
If you like more today, of this on our website,
it's behind the paywall. $15 to listen to the actual podcast.
So worth it.
Capitalism.
Today we're going to be discussing 1939's The Rules of the Game, directed by Jean Renoir. I mean, no, we're going to be discussing 2003's Passer la Bouche, directed by Alain René. Your confusion is understandable. But before we do that, let's do this. Heralds and Renault. Heralds and denouncements.
Renouncements.
Hair announcements. Hair announcements. Do they have any announcements about their hair?
I need to get mine cut. It's been a while.
I got.
Me too. Yeah,
I probably need a cut too. I'm getting like I had a samurai thing going on now, but mine's just like.
You had a Tom Cruise, the last samurai thing going on.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't. Okay, there's my horn for this week. I would like to herald the movie Parallels. It's available on Netflix Instant Streaming if you want to watch it. It's a cool little sci-fi concept about these people who find this building that can travel between different worlds. It's still the same Earth, but it's like different dimensions. So it's sort of a string theory type sci-fi, but there's all these different worlds, and some people from different worlds like enter the building and come along with them on their travels and whatnot. And there's it's a cool concept that I assume they were trying to put together as like a pilot for a television show, because that's what it feels like to me. But it's actually, the characters were well drawn enough, and the concept was cool enough that I was kind of like, all right, I would watch a show that was about this. Like, it improved on a lot of things that I see done really horribly in television. And so I was like, okay, I'd watch this if it was a show that, you know, just like kept going or whatever. So I enjoyed it, and I think people should check it out because it's available.
It's like Sliders for 2015.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
I used to love Sliders.
Who didn't? Doesn't?
Yeah, Jerry O'Connell.
Basil?
I am going to go ahead and denounce... oh man, I have so many choices. So many movies that I didn't like recently. Wow. What's going to be the most interesting? Okay, I'll just go with my first instinct, which is to say I'm going to denounce Southpaw, directed by Antoine Fuqua. I won't say too much because I have a feeling it will end up on a future podcast, but I thought it was really, really bad, and I didn't like almost any of it, and even actors that I normally like, I thought were very poorly used, like Rachel McAdams, and it's a really gross, dumb script that's very shamelessly manipulative. And I didn't like it one bit, and it felt super long. I couldn't wait for it to be over.
Oh, Antoine Fuqua, director of another one of my least favorite movies.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
Olympus
boy.
Has fallen.
he's not on a good run right now, Antoine Fuqua.
Has he directed anything that any of us like? I haven't seen Training Day.
I don't know.
I have seen Training Day.
I liked Training Day when I saw it like 14 years ago or whatever, but I'm guessing if I were to rewatch it, I would hate it.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't like it either. Seems like it's probably racist.
I go with almost assuredly racist.
Of course, they give Denzel an Academy Award for being in a racist movie.
Not Malcolm X.
Say what? Halle Berry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They both won the same year for movies that are both probably super racist.
Yep. That's the way it goes.
Good choices, Academy. Yeah. So I'm going to herald Clueless. I watched that movie on the weekend with Carla, and I think Ruben was the one who posted like a really good review of it the other day, and that made me want to rewatch it, and it was great. And now I think that Amy Heckerling is a really good director, really underappreciated director. Even though when I look at her filmography, she also did like Look Who's Talking and Look Who's Talking To. So maybe wasn't all gold that she put out there. But Clueless is an incredibly self-assured movie. Like, I can't believe the way that movie starts. It already feels like it is so confident and has like so much going on that like it's almost tough to keep up with everything that's happening, like just in the background of the shots and how everything has like, it's like everything is built and constructed in a really precise manner and yet still feels very like loose in the best sense of the word. And it's really funny, and I feel like
teen movies.
Way more in,
I said it's the speed racer of teen movies.
It sure is. It sure is. And I mean, I love Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Maybe I like that even a little bit more than this, but I mean, I like both pretty much equally, and I rarely see someone showing like teen life with so much like attention to detail and honesty and like, you know, something that's really rare. So that movie's great. Everyone should watch it.
And there's a good chance both of those movies just mentioned will be on a future podcast as well.
That's true.
Yeah.
Eyebrow raise.
A movie that I don't think will be on a future podcast of ours, continuing in the Carmike Cinema Classics tradition of the last couple weeks, I'm going to herald West Side Story, which I saw last week on the big screen for the first time and liked it even more than I did before.
I bet it looks great on a big screen. I've never gotten a chance to see it on a big screen.
It always looks great. It is a great, great looking film. And one of the things that I sort of had a complaint about last time was sort of like the superficiality of like introducing race into a movie that wasn't going to spend a lot of time, like, dealing with it or stuff like that. But I actually think on rewatch that it works. Not that the race discussion works, but that having it be superficial works. That it's kind of like how in this, like, musical love world or whatever, that they can't even, like, focus on the real issues that are dividing them and, like, how to come together because they're so focused on their teen emotions and stuff like that. It's clouding everything else. Mm. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, go ahead.
The only thing that I don't like about the movie is that Natalie Wood plays a person from the Dominican Republic when she is white. Even though she's really, really good in this movie, still, I think I would rather have a worse actress who was actually Dominican.
That's the 60s for you, though. The early 60s, at least, in Hollywood.
That's today, as well.
That's true.
Yeah. Still happens.
Yeah, I didn't...
They just had Emma Stone play a half-Asian person.
Yep. Thanks,
she's
Cameron.
She's based
Crow.
On a real person.
Yeah, it was funny. I was talking to my friend who works at MGM, and she said that she was in a like casting meeting with these guys who had this cast of like it was all white women, and basically the differentiation between them was like their hair color, and like, and they like. Came up with this cast of women with different hair color, and they were like, all right, I think we got a pretty diverse cast here. And she was just like, she was so angry. Like,
if that was a purposeful joke, that's a pretty funny joke.
I don't know. It definitely wasn't a joke for them.
Oh, Patrick's Hollywood Stories.
Oh, boy.
We're going to have a segment on this podcast called Patrick's. Hollywood
Insider
life.
Hollywood stories.
Hollywood stories.
Speaking of different
superficially
hair colors
racist
and diverse, yeah. Well, it was superficial race discussions, is what I said. But this is Basil's pick. So, Basil, if you want to give us a little plot description of Not on the Lips.
All right. So it takes place in 1925, and it's like a pretty classic French, you know, musical farce where it's a group of well-to-do people who are all engaged in various romantic entanglements, and you can tell that it's all gonna come to a head by the end, and they'll all be stuck in the same room together and trying to sort out their problems, and that's basically what happens. And then along the way there's a bunch of different songs that seem to be paying homage to different musical stylings. I definitely caught a couple that sounded like early Lubitsch, Marie Chevalier style and other things. There's really not a lot to say about the plot. Like, as soon as it starts, you kind of get where it's going. So, I guess just hop into it.
Yep. I didn't like this movie. I liked some elements of it. I thought it was really funny that the one guy who was American was way over exaggerated stereotype of an American the way it usually is with like French or Russian or whatever people in American movies. So I thought that was funny. And I thought that songs were pretty good. And I thought that then the movie started like taking itself a little more seriously and talking about like the all those people being sort of various degrees of despicable and incredibly ignorant and incredibly annoying. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately for me, that was less fun to watch than like once I figured out, oh, that's what they're going for here. Like, you know, it didn't really have to go on, but it did go on for a while. So, yeah. And like I said, the racial elements that started coming into play obviously also like mostly commentary, but I thought that most of the time it was kind of an unfortunate way to make commentary. I thought it was kind of a ham-fisted attempt at it. So, didn't really work for me.
So you said you did or did not like this?
Did not like it.
Did not like it.
Yeah.
I didn't hear him as well, but then I just guessed based on
context.
Yeah. Yeah. Context clues.
I like this movie, but not a lot. I pretty much like the same things that Ilya did. I thought The American was very funny. I thought it was, some of the satire worked pretty well, but I wasn't that in love with the songs, and I felt like it was intentionally shot in kind of a bland way, but that was like another joke, but that it's a joke that goes on too long, in the sense that I'm just sort of bored with the way the movie looks, like after not that long period of time.
I really liked this movie. I wish I had not waited to the last minute to watch it, because I think I missed some of the stuff that happened at the end, because I was like moving around and trying to get everything ready for the recording. But I really enjoyed the music. Like Ilya said, I really liked the like over exaggerated American speaking, like really poor French with that like American accent. Like je femme, you know. I don't know. I liked that the characters were kind of like, they were all kind of assholes in a way that I felt was intentionally obvious, and it was almost saying like, I don't know, I feel like in most musicals it's like, this person is perfect for me and they're perfect in every way or whatever, and then in this musical they're like, these people aren't like, it's a movie that's not about like everything being perfect. It's like, I don't know, it's like the main character Gilbert says, like, it's about settling for what, you know, like loving what you do have in your life or whatever. It's like, I guess her sister says that as well, like, you know, settling for what is good in your life, like when you can't have everything perfect. And I know that all the characters have some like really poor flaws about them, especially her husband George is kind of a racist asshole, because he has that whole song where he's just complaining about all the foreigners in France and that stuff. And I was like, why is this in here but to point out that he's a huge jerk?
But they're all racist assholes.
I know, yeah. I know. And they're all like, they all have some pretty major problems with them, but in the end they all kind of find happiness in a way that I thought was pointing out, like, you know, life isn't perfect or whatever. And I enjoyed that aspect of it. I guess I'm just not used to seeing that in musicals. Like, I'm not used to seeing nuance to the way that the characters are portrayed. It's usually like somebody's either really good or really bad, and they're going to sing a song about it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sort of on the same page with Ilya in that, I mean, one of my problems was the same as Ruben's, which I was like, oh, he's sort of shooting this to make it look like a stage and like a theatrical thing where they're constantly like looking at the camera and kind of treating us like a theater audience. It's like, hey, this thing's happening. And I was okay with it, but I felt like it was too long for kind of how trifling it was. And at certain points, it was just sort of hard for me to pay attention, because I was like, oh, I kind of get the point of the scene, and then the scene would keep going and I'd be like, all right, like you're just kind of doing the same thing still. But but there was a lot of stuff that I enjoyed about it as well, everything that everyone else has already mentioned. And and I think that I agree that I think it's like pointing out all these weird stuff, it made me wish a little bit that I knew more about French politics around that time, because I know there was like a run in the late 90s and early 2000s of pretty deep conservatism in the like French president and French kind of ruling class, and that this was probably at least partially trying to tie that back to sort of like very decadent 20s living, but I don't know enough to comment on anything specific, but so I'm sort of, I guess, in the middle on the movie.
Yeah,
I did find some of the elements of the construction of the scenes to be really captivating, though. I like the way that they have that big, those big like risers in the middle of the like seating area, I guess, that they're making up for the stage, and the way that they keep incorporating that into different people's movements and different people's songs. Mm-hmm. And the way that the way that Eric keeps, like, he's, every time he goes over there, it seems like he's always picking up the little like cushions and like putting them back down and like doing something with, mm-hmm, the cushions. And I don't know why that made me laugh, but it did. It always made me laugh when he was just like picking up cushions, like it, like that's what he did whenever he was agitated. And I also liked the way that they shot the opening too, where you're sort of like looking straight down on all of the like snacks that they have prepared, and the women are like, mm-hmm, singing up to the camera. And
I really like that song a lot. Yeah,
that song is really good.
There was like a slow fade between like the note or like the invitation and like the food or something like that, and it was on like a similar shaped table as the note, and I was like, this is really cool, maybe I'm gonna like this movie a lot. Yeah. But then I only just kind of liked it.
And I also like the way that they did, instead of actually having people go out of doors, they would just have them fade out. Like,
yeah,
they would fade out of the movie when they walked toward a door. I thought that was a really weird trick, and I didn't understand why exactly they did that. But then I was thinking, like, maybe there's, like, part of the set that they just didn't want to bother opening up or something. I don't know exactly, like...
I think it was another theatrical thing, in the way that, like, when people leave, they just kind of, like, disappear into...
Yeah, yeah. But it was... I don't know. It was kind of funny to me. And I was also... I don't know. When I was watching it, I was thinking about, like, the way they must have shot some of the stuff. And I was kind of captivated with the whole little set piece that they have on the stage, where they have, like, all the little... It's like a castle, and then there's like cactuses, and it's, I guess it's supposed to be in Mexico. There was another part where it's the two sisters are singing like behind this little like sheer curtain, when they think that George may have figured out that Gilbert was married to Eric before, and behind them is Charlie, the young man, and he's like in the Zorro costume, and he's like doing like sword moves, and you just hear like whoosh, 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 behind them. And it's like, that's a really funny thing to have going on behind them when they're like in this moment of like panic, and it's just like there's a guy like swinging a sword behind them. So I enjoyed the way that they staged a lot of stuff. I did think sometimes they just kind of like left a song to be sung in a very like flat, you know, like I don't know, like static shot, which felt odd to me, but I thought they did enough with the rest of the movie to actually make it visually interesting that I never got bored watching it.
Yeah, the blocking was at least passable, if not good, but to me it was the lighting that was the real problem. I wrote down that I thought this was lit like a BBC television show, which... Like, to me, at first was funny, but then I was like, I thought he was going to change at some point, since I've seen other films of his that are better lit.
Yeah, that distracted me as well. And I mean, the only thing I could figure out is that whenever there was, like, gaudy stuff, the way it was lit made that stuff sparkle a lot, and I was like, this seems like a lot of,
yeah,
you know...
Probably.
Excess lighting just to get that like one effect where she's wearing that necklace and it's sparkling, or when they sit at the dinner table, all the silverware is like has these weird lens flare gleams on it. But
yeah. She was wearing that dress that had just like was like covered in jewels.
Yeah. It's a very ostentatious dress. And she kept being like, "Do you like it?"
I know, it's okay. I was gonna say there were also moments in this where that I thought were like really funny, for not like, I don't know, they didn't seem like actual jokes. They just felt like really playful. Like, there's a part where the two sisters are up in the bedroom talking, and they're like, "Oh no, you know, will George find out that I was married to Eric or whatever?" And it's like, "Eric will be here any time." And then the doorbell rings, and they both just go, "Ah!" that was really funny.
I like the part right after that when she goes out into the hall, and then it cuts to a shot of like two hedgehogs or something.
Oh yeah. Those were weird.
And then it
those
just
are...
cuts down to downstairs, and we never see those hedgehogs again. I was like, that was so odd.
I couldn't tell if those were actual hedgehogs or if they were like some sort of puppet, like made to look like hedgehogs. They were very weird looking because they didn't look like actual hedgehogs.
It's a very strange moment.
I was a little disappointed in that when the movie first started, literally every conversation was gossip where they weren't talking about themselves or like anything related to their own interpersonal, like whoever they were talking with, they were always talking about someone who wasn't there. And I thought the whole movie was going to be that, and that would be pretty amazing. But eventually they did have to have conflict with characters who were actually on screen. But if they could have managed some weird farce where people were coming in and out but always talking about the people who weren't there and still made it compelling, that would be a pretty amazing feat.
Yeah, that would be pretty fun.
Who were those women?
I don't know. Like, they were chorus. Just like the Greek chorus. They just come in and then disappear.
They were weird.
That was another thing with the fades, because one time Audrey Tautou leaves and she doesn't fade out. She just walks off. So I was like, oh, do they only do the fades for characters who aren't coming back? But then they did come back, so I couldn't tell why.
Just
they
for
did
old
the fades
characters.
Sometimes, but not.
No, they did it for Audrey Tautou once. So,
yeah.
And apparently, they did not do it for her at some time. I didn't notice who got them and who didn't.
There was some one specific time where maybe it would have been too difficult to do it because what's her name? The other sister who's not Gilbert.
What is her name? I've forgotten her name now.
Yeah,
it's
sorry.
Lars.
but that she says goodbye. Audrey Tautou says goodbye to her, and she's still on camera when she leaves. So maybe they couldn't have done a fade because then she would disappear too, even though she wasn't leaving.
Arlette is the name of the sister.
Arlette.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
How do you pronounce Audrey Tautou's character's name? Because it's like a weird, almost male name.
Yeah,
I think that's like part of the joke, right? That they all have weird feminized versions of guys' names, but like really unexpected ones, like Gilbert and Hugo. And
yeah.
I didn't catch that joke, but it makes sense.
I didn't get it until just now, but I was like, those are strange names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause... Also, like, the joke of when she first hears the name Eric Thompson, she's like, oh, Eric Thompson! Like, there's only one Eric
lobster.
Thompson in the whole world. Like, again, it's really funny because it's like, well, how many Americans are there, right? Like, they all...
Yeah.
Isn't there? There's probably just one of them that's named Eric Thompson.
Yeah, that's really funny.
Again, it's tying like into that theme of really exoticizing Americans.
Which is a really good joke. That worked for me so hard. Like, the exoticizing of the American character is really funny to me.
Yeah. But that's,
I mean, but it's also that, you know, it's a musical trope or whatever, like the long lost someone or whatever coming back or something like that, and then like the way that they set it up that it's like really obvious that he's gonna come back. She's like singing, she's like, as long as I never see him again, everything will be fine or whatever. I don't know, I thought that was pretty funny, and like a play on the tropes, and like I don't know, the like I agree with Patrick's reading a little bit in that I like the ending and how, like, everyone sort of ends up together, but it just, like, nothing actually works out. Like, normally in a musical, like, everything works out and people end up together, but in this it's just, like, people end up together and, like, some people had to lie to end up together, and some people ended up together, like, completely randomly. And, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny, too, that she just lies and is like, yeah, it used to be us that was married, and then he just goes along with it, and then they just are married after that. Like, like two characters that never expressed any romantic interest in each other, really. Just...
I also like how she calls him Sam and, the whole time instead of Eric.
And then well,
sounds more
George,
American.
George is like pretty a pretty awful dude in my opinion.
Yeah,
he's really bad.
Yeah, he's like super racist, and then
he's also pretty sexist too. Yeah,
yeah, he's like he has this theory that if you get with a woman when she's a virgin and then treat her right, she'll never leave you, like branding a cattle or something like that. He compares it to at one point, I think, leaving like
yeah,
a
he also
holy
compares
Mardana.
It because he's a man in the metal industry. He compares it to like bonding two metals together.
Yeah,
like, yeah.
And like
leaving an imprint.
The idea that like things work out for him seems like. Or sort of work out for him, like that, like what we're keeping from happening is him getting super grossly jealous, which he already is. Like that we're pacifying those feelings in him does feel like a pretty funny joke to me.
Yeah,
that, like,
I like the fact that well, while George is, I guess, really obviously racist and xenophobic, the artist character, what's his name again, who's my least favorite of
Charlie.
Charlie.
Oh yeah, he's the worst.
He's more like super obliviously racist, or not, or like totally on purpose racist, but like. Because he's an artist, he gets away with it, or is like supposed to be more charming about it.
I thought that scene was pretty funny too. When
yeah,
he's like,
I thought,
and what do I represent? He's like,
yes.
What
it was
he
really
say?
Gross.
Like the something of the Redskins.
Oh yeah, something like that.
I mean, when it started off by him calling it primitive souls, I was already like, oh, here we go, here we go, and then he showed up as like. Zorro or whatever.
Yeah, Zorro.
And then, you know, what's her name? Gilbert. She shows up in like a, I guess, whatever, Hispanic attire. And
yeah. She even has the little, like,
yeah,
all those things a little,
like
yeah.
All of that is like,
would you say
really...
that she looks like a Muñequita?
Yes, I would
like
say
a,
that she is
like
one of those
Spanish
Harlem little ladies. Yeah. Oh man, no, that scene was incredibly like cringeworthy, and I really thought that like that's I guess where my point kind of comes from, where I didn't like the movie that much is like I get that he's criticizing the like. Not just aristocracy, bourgeoisie, for their like total ignorance of this and like appropriation of other people's culture, but like it didn't have to go on for like 10 minutes. After a while, it really becomes like not just like really awful to watch. It's just at some point the romanticism of it just like kind of starts making you feel like I'm not sure that this movie's really like is he still criticizing it or is he like a little bit indulging in what he's like also criticizing. He's kind of is, and
actually I'll say that I disagree because I felt like he was actually I don't know, I mean I think that you can never give enough shit to like artists like Picasso and other like Cubism and everything like that, that he was sort of making fun of all those people for You know, I mean, they're super, super famous and still really well revered, and we still like try to play down as much as possible the fact that they were just like ripping off African art and other artists and saying like, I have made it real art. This is like primitive art, but I've made it. And I don't know that. Like my stuff goes in a museum and their stuff goes in like a natural history museum. So.
Yeah,
the real art, and that's still the case. You know, like African sculptures and stuff, they have like their own separate place, and then Picasso has his place, and you know, I don't know. When I was in an art history class, I had a professor who talked a lot about that and how it would be, it should be a lot more intersectional, and that like you should have, you know, one room that's got Picasso stuff because Picasso stuff is still good and important, I guess, but that if you combine the two and had the African stuff that he was sort of ripping off or, you know, reappropriating and gave it a better context so that you didn't have to look at, you know, just because it's good doesn't mean that you can't look at the parts that are super problematic and awful. And I know, whenever people make fun of like colonialist attitudes around that time, like the fact that the bachelor pad looks like this weird Asian sex den or whatever.
Absolutely.
I was down with it, but I mean, I can understand that maybe it goes on too long or you didn't like it, but I thought it was pretty good.
I like that the criticism was on point, I thought, as well. I just felt like, what did this movie do to really undercut it except show, oh, well, this is like kind of stupid, and then like keep showing it and showing it and showing it. Like, I'm not sure, I don't know, maybe it would have been interesting, since this movie is like a modern take on these like types of musicals who also indulged in this sort of stuff a lot, and I think don't get enough shit for it either, that it could have, like, I don't know, just introduced some kind of way, like some kind of a commentary on it that was like that kind of messed with this aesthetic, that messed with this idea, you know, like even if it had just introduced like a black character who was an actual character, or like a Hispanic character in this movie that actually played a larger role, and it somehow was like, it would just mess with the with how you, I don't know, how you reacted to it. And I don't know, I thought that the movie didn't do enough to really, you know, comment on it as much as it just showed it and reproduced it.
I think the movie, I don't know, it maybe doesn't do like an outwardly good job of like really hitting that point hard, but I did feel like there were enough like light touches throughout the movie for me personally, that I felt like I understood that Rene was like, he was kind of making fun of these people too. Like, at the same time, he was kind of saying like, you know, what are the goals that they really want to achieve? And like, he was also kind of saying like, their hang-ups about things are really stupid. Like, the drama over these kinds of things are really kind of stupid. Like, they would all probably just be better off if there wasn't any of this drama. And, you know, even the main, like, the titular hang-up of Eric, where he doesn't want to be kissed on the lips, he's just like, oh, it'll be gross or whatever. It's just like, it's such a stupid hang-up to have about it. And then, like, that ends up being the reason that he falls in love with Arlette at the end. Is like, oh, she kissed him on the lips. Like, that's all he needs. It's just someone to have kissed him on the lips, and that's going to be the person he falls in love with. Like, it's so arbitrary and just, like, a weird, like, psychosexual hang up to have, but you're just,
and
like,
we don't even see it, like,
yeah,
it just shows their feet.
And that I also like the way that is shot.
I thought that part was awesome, because like, at first I didn't know what was going on. I thought she was just flying into the air or something.
I pictured her like in a cartoon, like where she kisses him and she just like points straight up in the air like a cartoon character or something. Then he's just like holding her, and I was just like, this is so weirdly shot. I like it.
Yeah, I love that shot, I mean, actually. The way that her feet keep going up, because you think he's just going to lift her a little bit, and then they just disappear and stay down.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought that, you know, there's definitely like all of the drama between the characters is so petty. Like, it's so like, oh no, I don't want him to find out I had a husband before him or whatever. Like, he'll be super jealous. Or, and it's like, why does that even, like, just tell him, like, if you're honest with him and he really loves you, like, why is that even going to be a big deal?
Because he's an awful person.
I know, right? Yes. It's because your relationship is a sham.
Yeah, I mean, the satire, I feel very confident saying that this is a satire, but it's very subtle. It's, like, very in its, like, self. My favorite part of the scene, though, the Primitive Soul scene, is actually what made me laugh really, really hard, and I hope that it was intentionally a joke and not just bad directing, but when he's, like, setting up the scene and he just moves everything, like, 6 inches. Like, he just moves all the props or whatever, like, just, like, a little bit. It's like, oh, like, because you see that all the time. It's, like, actors doing, like, busy work, like, on screen when, like, you could understand them, like, bringing it from, like, behind the set or whatever. It's like, oh, no, they switched the cactus and the rock. And he's like, oh, I want to put the cactus here and the rock there. But, like, nothing really changes about the scene. Yeah. He just, like, straightens, like, things a little bit. He's like, oh, this cactus is supposed to be 1 foot closer. And I'm like, well, they would have just left it there previously. It never would have just been 1 foot behind. You did, like, I don't know. It made me laugh really hard.
Yeah, it was... I do think that was a joke because I didn't notice it in the movie. Like, I didn't notice that he didn't move anything around. Like, I just... My view is, like, elsewhere, I guess. I was watching Gilbert, like, you know, like, trying to get rid of Eric or whatever she was doing. Mm-hmm. Where she's, like, trying to keep him from spying on her. So, yeah, I do think that was a joke that he doesn't actually move anything.
Well, he just moves it all, like, a little bit. It's just, it basically nothing changes. It's like...
Yeah, it doesn't change anything significant about it. I didn't even notice it, so... Yeah.
And the lighting looks horrible. Like, when he turns on the lights, it's just, like, a weird... Like, it's, like, even worse. It's just, like, barely lit and kind of flat and strange, so... Which makes me, again, think that, for sure, Renee was making sort of a joke about theater lighting with the way that he lit the whole movie, but... I agree with Ruben that it's too long of a joke for what you get from it.
I tried to find what Jonathan Rosenbaum wrote about this movie since it's one of his favorites, and all I found was like lists with it in it and like a paragraph of him just saying it was great with literally no.
Yeah.
No content.
Yeah.
I mean, he wrote some of it for that Global Discoveries thing that he does, right?
Yeah, I only remember him saying that he thought it was a deconstruction of the musical, and I'm like, I get that, but what else? What did people think of the cross-dressing character?
Oh, that was so weird.
Yeah, I didn't know what was going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it's like a reference to something, but I haven't. I mean, like it made me think of Monty Python and all those.
Yeah,
things.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
Like, I was like, what is this doing besides being a reference to all those things from the 70s? So, I guess Kids in the Hall, even.
Yeah. So all I found from
cross-dressing Kids in the Hall, though.
Yeah.
All I found from Rosenbaum about this was that, I mean, he says stuff about it being like Lubitsch-y and the MGM musicals and stuff like that, and he mostly writes, the fact that residents of Hong Kong are more apt to appreciate this than Americans is my favorite anomaly of the quarter, I guess. When it came out. Yeah.
Here's another bit. He says, Pasteur Labouche, an eccentric and beautiful adaptation of a 1925 comic operetta that's showing in New York later this month but may not reach Chicago for quite some time.
Thanks. Oh, well.
good one. Good one, guys.
But he put it on his like top 10 of the 2000s. And I'm like, that's all you wrote about it?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Andy put it on his like 1,000 essential movies, I think.
Yeah, his essential cinema. What? It's not in my. Yeah, his essential cinema. It's not in my book though, because I don't have the newest edition. There's nothing in here about it.
Ruben is showing us his books.
Showing us his big books.
Yeah, that was actually why I wanted to watch it, because I was like, oh, it's a new René that Rosenbaum thinks is super great. And then,
yeah.
I don't know. It's okay.
Yeah, I'm definitely hoping that the next René will be better than this one.
Do nothing but René on the podcast. René cast. Mm-hmm. He's made a lot of movies, a lot more than I ever realized.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Yeah.
We'd be doing it for a little while.
Yeah. Could be like a side cast.
Yeah, but this is our
last year at Mayor Bud.
This is our second it's our third Jonathan Rosenbaum essential film that we've done on the podcast, and none of them have been great in my opinion. So we
Which
did,
were the other two?
What was the name of the Mask of the Red Death?
Really? Oh yeah!
Wow.
Was Jonathan Rosenbaum essential, and then the other one is Black Book.
Oh.
Oh, well, I like that one, so.
Yep, yeah. I like Black Book.
That's why I specified none of which I have liked.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
And we also, one of the lost ones, obviously, La Talente was.
La Talente, yeah. That's one of his faves.
Yeah. I like that one.
Oh.
That wasn't crazy.
I mean,
about that one.
Yeah, I don't think it's great, but at least I more understand why he likes it so much than I understand the other ones. So yeah, I watched another one of his essential movies, Flaming Creatures, last year, and I hated it. But
Creatures.
I think Jonathan Rosenbaum is really interesting, and I like his taste a lot.
Well, isn't Showgirls on his?
This has just been some. Yes.
Sure,
like a bunch of Paul Verhoeven is on his essential cinema, I think.
I think only Basic Instinct is on the actual 1,000 movies list.
He has mentioned like reevaluating.
He likes them, but
all the Verhoeven movies. So
yeah. But at the time that he made it, I think he only put Basic Instinct on there, even though he likes all of them. But.
Since then, he's realized that Showgirls is smarter than him.
Yeah, just Basic Instinct from the 90s, and then... Oh. He doesn't have... Oh, this version only goes up to 2003. This isn't the newer version?
Yeah.
On the newer version, I'm pretty sure he has Black Book.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, he has a bunch of movies that I really like on it, but they're ones that everybody likes, like Rules of the Game and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely.
And What Time Is It
one.
There?
Mm-hmm. He stuff really likes The World,
canon.
Which is a movie that I love.
Hmm.
The World.
I have that on my computer and I haven't watched it yet. Need to watch.
That movie might also be on a new podcast of ours.
Some sort of future podcast or something.
That might be
know.
Happening.
Might be happening soon. I don't know.
No.
I really don't have anything else to say about this movie.
We
can keep talking about movies that are on Jonathan Rosenbaum's
list.
So. If you want to.
Yeah, I could do that for a bit, yeah.
I was going to say one thing, even though it's a stupid thing that Patrick rightly pointed out is stupid, I sort of agree with Eric that kisses are gross.
Controversial
statement.
From an
intellectual perspective, like I think whenever I think about kissing, I'm like, the fact that we like it so much is pretty weird because it's a pretty gross thing to be doing, but... It is pretty awesome. Although I don't like watching people do it when it's, like, pretty real. before. I forget who it was. I watched some movie recently. Oh, Al Pacino in Heat. There's a part where he's making out with his wife, and I'm like, this is gross. You're a gross kisser, Al Pacino. I don't want to see this.
Yep.
Yeah, he is gross.
This list is 1,079 movies, so maybe this listology list also includes like the first edition plus the movies that he added the second time around.
I don't think he subtracted any. I think he just had an addendum later, so I don't think that he like was like, I changed my mind about these other ones and now the new ones are on. I think he just added some. So.
Yep. Here's a movie that I watched recently that I agree with him on, is canonical, When the Levees Broke, Requiem in 4 Acts. A movie you might be hearing more about in a future podcast.
Just going to keep hitting that cryptic.
Here's some movies from a previous podcast that made his list. Los Angeles Plays Itself.
Hey.
Down with Love, 25th Hour.
Lasso.
Oh, it has three Spike Lee, and that's pretty cool.
AI.
Yep.
Beau Travai. Rushmore.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of
listing movies.
The Venn diagram between Jonathan Rosenbaum's list of movies that are like canon favorites is probably pretty.
He does not pretty have good. Speed Racer or Marie Antoinette on there.
Well, give it some time.
I'm sure I'll get him on there.
Or that a John Carpenter.
My life goal is to convince him to love Speed Racer.
We can put that on our website. We convinced Jonathan Rosenbaum to like Speed Racer. It'll be our
claim to fame.
Yeah, exactly.
That's going to be my resume for the rest of my life.
Yep.
He also has Taste of Cherry, a movie you might be hearing about on a future podcast. He has Matinee, a movie you might be hearing on a past podcast.
Or you might have already heard about.
You may have already heard about it. I don't know. Depends on which one we get out first, I guess.
My Own Private Idaho.
You've heard about that one.
Yeah.
Barry Lyndon is on there as well. That's one you've heard about from us.
Sure.
For sure.
I feel like we should wrap this up.
No.
Yep. To kill us at this point.
I keep listing things. I'm going to look through my notes. I think my favorite scene was the lobster scene where she's cooking or whatever, the steam. I liked the way that it was done, and I liked how it was mostly like all on one side of whatever, and all the weird sound effects for the lobsters being dropped into the water. It was like really over the top sound effects. There's a dark shot that I liked. Music is weird. What is Charlie wearing? match cut to the kitchen. I like the line in the kitchen in which he says, "I've never known such calm and immobility," as if that's a good situation to be in.
Yes.
What these characters want is weird.
Good point, yeah.
You represent the last of the Redskins. Seats made out of cabinets? Dressing up like a man. That's what Audrey Tautou is going to do to seduce.
Oh yeah,
Charlie.
Yeah.
It's one of the suggestions.
I thought that was funny, like, and Charlie was like, "Oh yeah, I'm into that." I liked her seduction
techniques. Because I'm American. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you're enjoying the podcast. If so, please subscribe to us using your podcast subscribing service, and go to iTunes and create an account if you don't already have one. Give us a 5-star review.
Then create another account and give us another 5-star review. And just keep doing that.
Keep it going.
The more positive feedback we got on the podcast, the more likely it is that we'll be featured and the more listeners we'll get. So you can help us out, listeners. Thank you. If you thought we had anything else to say about Passer La Bouche, you... Wait, no, that's the wrong podcast. See you next time.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We'll be right back.